Mike Dempsey. Look, I hear from people all the time who are having tax problems, but don't be afraid of the IRS. Right now, you can talk or meet with local professionals that are here to help your specific tax issues. Accelerate your tax solution with Accelerated Tax Solutions.
The sports world keeps spinning, and the local conversation continues. Now, Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Tuesday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, our late show. Are you kidding me? Where else would you rather be at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday night than listening to 1010XL and 92.5 FM with Dylan Denmark, the Hacker Ryan Green with you? Glad you have stayed up late with us. We hope to make it worth your while. We got a great guest lineup tonight. As always, we'll set the scene for you. Right now, coming up first, probably in about 20, 25 minutes or so, Patrick Burnham, the Osceola.com, the brand new Rivals website for Florida State. Do you realize that 2 weeks from Saturday, Florida State plays a football game? 2 weeks from Saturday, they're 18 days away from the regular season beginning in Tallahassee at Doak Campbell Stadium, when Florida State hosts Duquesne. So we'll talk a little Seminole football with Patrick Burnham of the Osceola, which is the new Rivals website for Florida State. He is coming up in about 20 to 25 minutes. Coming up also in hour number one, we are, golly, I guess 2.5 weeks also away, 2 weeks from Friday, away from the first regular season of Friday Night Lights. High school football practice is going on all over Northeast Florida. We caught up with a lot of high school folks last week at High School Media Day. We want to let you hear those interviews as we count it down. I believe we have 12 shows left before Friday Night Lights gets underway here in Northeast Florida. So tonight, Mandarin High School, the Mustangs. I know a lot of you are alums of Mandarin High School. I'm an alum of Mandarin Middle School. I lived a half mile on the other side of the road, which sent me to Wolfson for 4 years. Loved every minute of it, but I certainly know a lot of Mandarin alumni, and Toby Bullock, the brand new head coach of the Mandarin Mustangs, will join us, and we will play that interview that we had at High School Media Day coming up in just a little bit. In the 11 o'clock hour, John Shipley of Jaguar Report. The Jaguars had a day off today, back on the field tomorrow, and of course they're getting ready for their second preseason game this Friday night against the Cleveland Browns. And Dylan Denmark, is it my understanding that at some point tonight on Hacker After Dark, and I'm willing to bet probably here in hour number one, we have a pair of tickets to give away to the Jaguars and the Browns? Is that the word on the street?
Yes, we will do that sometime, whenever you want to.
Ladies and gentlemen,
a pair of tickets.
That is unbelievable. Pair of tickets just for listening to Hacker After Dark, staying up late with us. Do not call now. But if I were a betting man, and seeing as how I'm running the program, so you can pretty much take this to the bank, I bet you at some point in the next 30 minutes, you're going to have a chance to win a pair of tickets to the Jaguars and the Browns coming up this Friday night. We'll also have my buddy Brent Beard. Love talking college ball with Brent Beard. We will look around the ACC, the SEC, and some big doings going on in the television world. Look, for the last 20, 25 years, if you're an SEC fan, you pop it on CBS at 3:30, right? Not for long. Your television world, your television landscape of college football is about to change. Conferences switching networks. It's going to be really kind of hard to get used to for a little bit. We'll kind of dive into that with Brent Beard coming up tonight in the 11 o'clock hour. But as we always do on Hacker After Dark, we begin each program with a big deal of the night. And Denmark, let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
2 weeks. If you can believe it, we are already 2 weeks into Jaguar training camp. Already have a preseason game under our belt. And as I was driving in today, I got to thinking, okay, what have we found out in the last 2 weeks, Jaguar training camp and one preseason game in Canton, Ohio, that we maybe did not know or did not think about the entire offseason. All right, so let's talk about it. What have we learned in the last 2 weeks of Jaguar camp? I'll tell you some things I've learned. I've learned Travis Etienne is going to be an even bigger factor on this offense than I thought he was going to be this offseason. And I thought he was going to be a big factor. But the more I see Travis Etienne, the more I get excited about what Travis Etienne could do in Doug Peterson's offense. And I'll tell you this, too. I thought Sunday was a big practice. Sunday was a physical practice. They got after it, full pads. And Travis Etienne took a couple of shots. Took a couple of hits. Decent hits by folks that were there. I was in the Charlotte airport walking from the E terminal to the B terminal, only having 15 minutes to get to my plane. That's what I was doing Sunday. But some of my media brethren were at their practice field at Episcopal. Very physical practice, but said Travis Etienne looked very good. I love it. Man, if that guy's healthy, he could be a weapon here in Jacksonville. Fantasy football, people. If you're going to draft Travis Etienne, I wouldn't wait too long. Don't think you're going to get him as a steal in round five or round six, particularly if you're in a league with people that know what they're doing. He's not going to be there. You better take him round four, I would think, at the absolute latest. He could have a big, big fantasy impact this year. What else have we learned? Well, I've learned that Luke Fortner is legit at center. Luke Fortner is going to be their starting center. A guy that was a third-round pick to go along with a Brandon Linder, remember, who was a third-round pick in 2014. Luke Fortner, barring injury, is going to be the opening center on opening day. I like it. They obviously like him. It's a lot of responsibility for a rookie, though. But if he's up to the task, good for him. And he certainly looks the part so far. What about Arden Key? You know, all the talk this offseason about the free agents the Jaguars brought in. How much time did we dedicate talking about Kirk and Jones and Ingram and Scherf, Olakon, Fadakasi, Darius Williams? Now, those guys did not play last Thursday night. You know who did play? Was Arden Key, who was another free agent acquisition. And other than Trayvon Walker, Arden Key might have been the best defensive player the Jaguars had on the field last Thursday night. He was a force. He was good. I want to see more of Arden Key. If he goes out there and plays well against Cleveland, whoo, Jaguars might have something there. Try not to get too high or too low in the preseason. But when a guy you don't expect much from goes out and gets two sacks on opening night, and if he can perform well this week again, could be something there with Arden Key. Trayvon Walker, look, it's one game. Again, repeat, try not to get too high or too low. But what we saw out of Trayvon Walker, how could you not be happy about that? What we saw in Canton. First play as an NFL player, first play as a Jaguar, gets in the quarterback's face. And it was a welcome to the NFL moment because he got called for an absolutely bogus roughing the passer. Officials in midseason form already. But I really, really like what I saw out of Trayvon Walker. So Trayvon Walker, Arden Key, Luke Fortner, Travis Etienne. I'll tell you another thing, too. 2 weeks into camp, I am shocked at where James Robinson is, in a good way. The guy suffered an Achilles injury around Christmas. It's not even mid-August yet, and he's looking really good, even participating in some team drills. I would have never thought 3 weeks ago, a month ago, that we'd be sitting here on August the 9th and James Robinson has been participating in some team drills at practice. The miracles of modern medicine, man. Achilles injuries used to be a year. A year you were out. Cam Akers came back last year in 5.5 months. James Robinson is practicing again in 7.5 months. Absolutely incredible. I don't think I've learned much from Trevor Lawrence yet in the first 2 weeks. I expected him to look good at practice, and guess what? He's looked good at practice. We obviously haven't seen him in a game yet. I hope that changes on Friday night. We still, I don't believe, have definite word whether he will or will not play. I told you guys last night you need to play Trevor Lawrence, in my opinion. And I was pretty surprised. The reaction I got on the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures, at least the Jaguar fans that texted last night, there was about a dozen of you. I don't think I got one person that agreed with me, not one. Everybody said they don't need to see him. We'll see him in Washington. All right. Again, he did not play well his rookie year. He's got all new players surrounding him on offense. They have no game reps with one another. You just want to throw them out there and say, have at it against Washington. Practice is enough. I'd like to see him for a quarter on Friday night, maybe a quarter or a quarter and a half against Pittsburgh, and that's it. And like we said, look, there's not a right or wrong, but I guarantee you, the folks of you saying right now, do not play him. Do not play Trevor. You will be the same people that will call into the fifth quarter after that Washington game if Trevor struggles. And you will say, oh, Hacker, why didn't they play him in the preseason? His timing was off. He didn't have chemistry with his guys. Well, you got to have one or the other. You either have to risk injury to let him build that rapport or not let him get injured and not have that rapport going into opening day. You choose one, not both. Other things that I've learned, I'm trying to think of any negative things that I've learned. I don't really want to throw anybody under the bus. Again, we're 2 weeks in. I'll tell you this, Juwan Taylor better get healthy quick. I know he's coming back from a hamstring. He's going to start participating. He needs to. Because Walker Little's look pretty good. If that's going to be a competition, Juwan Taylor needs to get in that competition. I still think if Taylor's healthy, I would start him. But I do like what I've seen out of Walker Little to this point. I didn't realize, quite frankly, either, that Tyler Shatley potentially is in play as much as he is at left guard. I thought that was Ben Bartsch's job coming into training camp. That might not be the case. You could very well have an offensive line opening day of Cam Robinson, Tyler Shatley, Luke Fortner, Brandon Scherff, and then either Walker Little or Juwan Taylor. I went back and watched the Hall of Fame game last night. Not all of it, but enough of it. Kalavon Chaisson, I saw him in the backfield, I think, once or twice, but man alive. A lot of those starters for the Raiders were not in there. I saw Arden Key in the backfield. I saw Trayvon Walker in the backfield. I think I saw Chaisson in the backfield once. You'd like to see more from Kalavon, the number 20 pick in the draft in 2020. It's not good when Arden Key steals the show and he is an afterthought as a free agent and your first round pick from 2020 was on the field with him. So there's a lot that has been learned, a lot that will be learned. Look, we're still, 33 days away from the Jaguars in Washington opening day 2022. We'll learn a little bit more this Friday against Cleveland. We'll learn a little bit more next week leading into Pittsburgh. And then I think we'll finally learn what we need to know. The hay will be in the barn after those joint practices in Atlanta. Because after those joint practices in Atlanta, you're going to know who your 53-man roster is, and you're going to start preparing for opening day. So we'll have this conversation again next week. and the week after, what have we learned to this point? And it'll be interesting. Maybe we'll learn something new this Friday against Cleveland. I hope we learn that Trevor Lawrence looks the part, because I hope we see him out there on Friday night. 641-1010 is the phone number if you want to get involved on the phone line or on the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. You are more than welcome to do so. A couple of pieces of business. As always, Jacksonville, we are streaming for your viewing pleasure. Simply go to YouTube, the 1010XL YouTube channel. We'll be on there until midnight. Be sure and like and subscribe while you're there. Also on the 1010XL Twitter handle, at 1010XL, Hacker After Dark, streaming there until midnight tonight. Be sure and give us a checkout. Also, we do have a pair of Jaguar tickets. Don't call yet. Not yet. I bet you're going to call in the next 20 minutes, though. That's your hint. Not yet. Jaguars-Browns on Friday night as the home of the Jacksonville Jaguars. You'll get the broadcast right here this Friday night. We'll give away a pair of tickets coming up in the very near future. Dylan Denmark, it's my understanding as well, we have something else to give away tonight.
Yes, we're giving away a Trevor Lawrence 1010XL customized Gatorade bottle, and all you have to do is listen for the whistle. It's a training camp montage that will air during one of the breaks. So you'll hear the whistle and give me a call at 641-1010. Holler at your boy.
Now, if you're going to hear the whistle during one of the breaks, the Trevor Lawrence 1010XL Gatorade bottle, Dylan said you're going to hear the whistle during one of the breaks. We are going to break right now on Hacker After Dark. Coming up next, more into the world of the NFL, more into the world of college football, and we got a great guest lineup for you tonight. We'll start knocking those out as well. It is a Tuesday night in Jacksonville, Florida, and you got it locked in to Hacker After Dark here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Glad you're with us till midnight tonight, our late night on a Tuesday, Hacker After Dark, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. So, you think it's bad being a Jaguar fan? Well, it certainly has been. It's been a comedy of errors, dating back basically since 2008. Just horrific move after horrific move. But I do believe we are on the way up. We are swimming our way out of the bottomless pit that we've been in, and I think the Jaguars are soon not going to be among the worst teams in the league. The Chicago Bears are a cluster you-know-what right now. Just awful. And I know we have Taylor Dahl here at 1010XL, one of the biggest Chicago Bears fans I know, and I feel sorry for her. But my goodness, what are they doing in the Windy City? That could actually apply to a lot of things going on in the Windy City right now. But I'll stick primarily to football. Roquan Smith now wants out. This is after they lost Allen Robinson in free agency. This is after they traded Khalil Mack. I believe Danny Trevathan either got released or retired. And now Roquan Smith says, I want out of here too. I'm not appreciated. Good grief. Justin Fields, he might be good. We're not going to know. Real quick, off the top of your head, you're listening to Hacker After Dark right now at 10:25 on a Tuesday. You are a diehard sports fan. Quick, who are the starting wide receivers in Chicago?
Isn't there one dude, last name Mooney?
Darnell Mooney. Who's the other one?
Golly. I've seen it. I can't.
Give me a starting tight end.
No idea.
Give me any starting offensive lineman.
Trey Burns not still in Chicago, is he?
No. Okay. No, he's long retired.
Yeah, okay.
Give me any starting offensive lineman. Give me a starting defensive lineman. It is unbelievable what is going on right there in Chicago. And it's not like they're tanking, right? They're not tanking for C.J. Stroud. They're not tanking for Bryce Young. They have Justin Fields. But my goodness, man. I know when we did our division previews, we were talking about Chicago's in rebuild. They're not in rebuild yet. They're in the sky is falling. The avalanche is caving us in mode. Your only guy that you could really build around on that defense is probably Roquan Smith. And now he wants out of there. Now, whether he gets that request granted or not, we shall see. But holy moly, Matt Eberflus, I hope you got good money. Hope you got good money to go be the coach there. Because that is a disaster right now in Chicago. At least the Texans, who are also in rebuild, they appear to have some direction. They had a good draft. You bring in a couple of first rounders in Kenyon Green and Singletary. Derek Stingley. You bring in Christian Harris out of Alabama. John Metchie, I know he's going to miss the year, but he's a good player. Hopefully he can get over his situation and return to the field in 2023. Atlanta, same thing. You got Kyle Pitts, right? You got some things to build around in Atlanta. What are you building around in Chicago? Absolutely nothing. Roquan Smith is a really good player. Unfortunately, the Jaguars, I don't think, have the cap room, and obviously they brought in Foye Oluokun, so the Jaguars have no need, it appears, at that position. But my goodness, if I was a contending team, I would be lining up for the opportunity to bring Roquan Smith to my organization. That guy is a beast at linebacker. Absolutely no question about it. I also saw this. It's never too early to think ahead, right? We're on the doorstep of the 2022 season. But our friends at CBS Sports earlier today, just for a little appetizer, threw out the top 25 free agents to be following this season. And what I was interested in was, there any Jaguars that were going to be up for free agency? Number 25, Saquon Barkley. Boy, you talk about a fall from grace. What one knee injury can do at the running back position. Remember Saquon Barkley? Remember him? Are we even talking about him anymore? David Montgomery in Chicago. Okay, there's a guy. He desperately is going to want out after this season. He's on this list. Ngakoue, that's hilarious to me. Ngakoue is set to become a free agent after this year. Is Ngakoue trying to set the record? Is he going after Ryan Fitzpatrick for number of teams in the NFL? Think about Ngakoue. He was drafted in 2016. Jacksonville, Minnesota, Baltimore, Las Vegas, Indianapolis. Five teams. For Yannick Ngakoue.
You think if he would have stayed, if he signed that contract extension, he still would be here?
I'm sure. But that's not wild. Only does Ngakoue, not only has he played for now five teams, he's set to become a free agent after this season, he still has me blocked on Twitter. Unbelievable. Yannick, I was just having a conversation with you last year, man. Unblock me. Let's continue the dialogue. Baker Mayfield set to become a free agent. That'll be fascinating. Imagine he goes to Carolina and has a good year. Gets a long-term deal. By the way, he's going to win that job. What does that say about Sam Darnold? Are you kidding? Mayfield's been there a month, 3 weeks, and talking to people in Carolina, it's like it's done. He's going to be their starting quarterback to the point where they might even be shopping Darnold. Shopping him for what? Some green beans and a can of Spam? What are you going to get for Sam Darnold if Baker Mayfield came in there and won the job in 3 weeks? Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, the former Gators on this list, I love him. I do. I think he's great. He talks a lot, but when you're as good as he is, I have no problem with that. Bradley Chubb, set to become a free agent. Unfortunately for him, he can never stay healthy. But he'll get big money next season. No Jaguars on this list. You wouldn't expect there to be. Really quick, the top 10, free agents after the 2022 year, Dalton Schultz in Dallas, Jack Conklin in Cleveland, center Eric McCoy in New Orleans, Jesse Bates. Bates, there's an issue with him in Cincinnati. He's missed all of camp. He's mad about his contract. Roquan Smith on this list is number six. Again, he wants out. Derwin James set to become a free agent next year. He's probably going to get franchise tagged. Orlando Brown in Kansas City. Quentin Nelson in Indianapolis. No way he hits the market. And then two guys you might have heard of set to become free agents, Lamar Jackson and Tom Brady. So a quick little appetizer, free agents to be after the 2022 season. We got a ball game, ladies and gentlemen, here in Jacksonville on Friday night. Do you realize in less than 48 hours, the Cleveland Browns are going to get on an airplane and they're flying to Jacksonville. Preseason week two. Game one for Cleveland, game two for the Jaguars. Hacker After Dark won't be on Friday night, but don't fret. That's because we have the Jaguar broadcast. Frank Frangie, Jeff Loggeman, Pro Football Hall of Famer Tony Baselli on the call right here on Friday night. You want to go to the game? Be caller four right now. 641-1010. We do this to the late night audience, the midnight shift. We're giving tickets to you at 10:30 on a Tuesday night. Caller 4-641-1010, and Denmark will hook you up with a pair of tickets to Jacksonville, Cleveland, Friday evening. Coming up next, into the world of college football, we will talk to Patrick Burnham, the Osceola.com. That's the rival site for Florida State. Seminoles 18 days away from their regular season opener. Let's go to Tallahassee, Florida next on Hacker After Dark.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. Now, yellow. Another interview on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Florida State, 18 days away from starting the 2022 regular season. They take on Duquesne at Doak Campbell Stadium, and then, of course, Labor Day weekend, they take on go to New Orleans to take on LSU out in the Bayou. Patrick Burnham, the Osceola.com, the rival site for Florida State, always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Patrick, how you doing?
Doing great, Ryan. Thanks for having me. Of course, you've got a lot of Seminoles getting ready to head your way in about 48 hours. Coach Norvell is bringing his team over to Jacksonville for 2 days' worth of practice, and we're going to follow him over there along with a lot of the local media. So looking forward to getting over to Jacksonville and continuing to watch this team develop.
Yeah, that seems to be something that Coach Norvell likes to do. I think he did it last year as well. And look, Northeast Florida's been pretty good to Florida State on the recruiting trail. They've gotten a couple of kids out of Clay County to commit to them. Roderick Kearney from Orange Park, Sam Singleton from Fleming Island. So not to break down recruiting entirely, but it does appear Mike Norvell has made Northeast Florida a priority, not just for recruiting, but to bring the team over here and kind of reestablish a connection with Jacksonville a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, Jacksonville traditionally has always been good to Florida State, going back to, you know, the latest Florida State Seminole to be inducted to the NFL Hall of Fame, Leroy Butler. And, you know, I can remember when I was in college, you had Chris Parker and just a ton of guys that signed with FSU, Kelvin Smith, great linebacker. But yeah, so certainly Jacksonville's got a lot of talent, and Mike and his staff have done a great job of obviously getting over there, building relationships, and like you said, nailing down some of these kids.
You know, Patrick, most teams around the country, certainly in our area, they began practice a couple of days ago. They're not even really into pads yet. Florida State's in week, what, two or three already of their camp, because they, of course, play in what is called week zero, August 27th. We're 2.5 weeks away from the season getting underway. A broad overview to this point, how has practice been going, and how does the team look so far?
Well, you know, they're 11 days into it. They were in full pads today, and this was the second day of six straight days of practice. They will practice again tomorrow in Tallahassee, jump on some buses, and drive over to Jacksonville for practice on Thursday and Friday, then come back to Tallahassee to get in Doak Campbell Stadium under the lights for a little scrimmage. But, yes, they got into Doak for the first time this preseason today. They were supposed to scrimmage outside on Saturday night but got lightened out. But, yeah, this was you know, there's a different energy and feel this team than the previous three teams that we've covered since I've been with the Osceola, going back to Willie's last team. You know, they're a more confident team. They're a more focused team, and they've worked tremendously hard in camp. They've had a couple, you know, anytime you're in camp, you're going to have some rough segments, periods, practices, whatever, however you want to define it. But they certainly seem to be taking more of the identity of their head coach, Mike Norvell, who's obviously a very focused, high-energy, confident guy. But when you've been around this program for 4 years, you can't really put your finger on what's different. It's more a feel. And, you know, when you've known someone for a while, you can kind of pick up on their moods. But you can't put a finger on it. But there's a different feel around the practice field. This team seems to be very tight. Now, what that means when we get to the last weekend in November, Florida comes to town, we'll find out. That's when we play the games. But certainly this is a team that's deeper than Mike's first two teams, which makes practice more competitive, which produces better players. And obviously the end goal of that is to produce better results. But certainly impressive 11 days in.
Patrick Burnham of the Osceola, the Rivals website for Florida State. He's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Patrick, I really like Mike Norvell. Whenever we ask him to come on here on 1010XL, he always does. Very gracious with his time. Anybody around Mike Norvell that talks to him, you can't help but like the guy and his energy. And I've talked to a lot of alums that like Mike Norvell. But they also are getting to the point where liking Mike Norvell is one thing. It's time for Mike Norvell to start winning some games in year three. Is that the vibe in Tallahassee coming into the season as well?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's Florida State, right? And so Mike talks about getting back to the standard. You know, everyone in Florida State, you know, associated with Florida State, whether you're alumni, former player, you know, we all have great expectations for the program. It's what we, you know, when I was at school, they were just starting to reel off championships in the ACC. Obviously, won a national championship when I was in college, and my father was the linebackers coach at Florida State. So, you know, I've been around this program a long time. People want results, and, you know, listen, they need to take a step forward this season. They are positioning themselves well to do that. You know, they've built some strength around the offensive line. The offensive line is certainly deeper, whether it's 8 deep, 10 deep, we'll see as camp progresses. But certainly they seem to be better there. Jordan Travis, according to Mike Norvell, of course, we've seen him in practice. We have not seen him in a scrimmage. You know, he talks about Jordan just elevating his game, being more comfortable with the offense, more in command of the offense. And obviously, you know, everyone appreciates the way Jordan plays. He gives you all he's got all the time, right? But, yeah, certainly, you know, listen, I think the expectation is a bowl. And, you know, I think it's going to be a crazy year in the ACC, particularly on the Atlantic side. You've got some talented teams or teams that have potential with Clemson and NC State and Wake and Louisville. So, you know, Florida, it's going to be a tightly contested conference, I think, on both sides. But Florida State has positioned itself to make the next move that it needs to under Mike.
Patrick, you mentioned Jordan Travis. He's back for year 9 in Tallahassee, it feels like. He has been there forever. There's no one breathing down his neck this year. There's no Mackenzie Milton this year. It's Jordan Travis's team. How much mentally do you think that'll help him?
Well, listen, I think, you know, when you got guys that have winning pedigrees brought in to finish their senior seasons, right? And most of the time when a guy's brought in for one season, you know, he's kind of a hired gun. So, you know, I think the expectation, they were hoping to get a healthy Mackenzie Milton, but they didn't. You know, you got to applaud that kid for coming back from the injury, the fact that he even was able to line up for one play, let alone play 4 or 5 games. But certainly, you know, as you said, something that he doesn't have to worry about. There's no Alex Hornibrook on the sideline. There's no Mackenzie Milton. You know, Mike has you know, obviously stated that this is Jordan's team. And listen, you know, Jordan, as the past is gone for Florida State since Jordan's been here, the offense has kind of is put some more complimentary pieces around him, which is what they've done with the transfer portal with Trey Benson and the receivers. You got Winston Wright, hopefully will be back at some point. Then, you know, the Johnny Wilson and Micah Pittman. So, you know, they're trying to put those pieces around him. Then you bring in the offensive lineman, Demetri Emmanuel from Charlotte and Bless Harris from Lamar and Turnin' Time from South Carolina to kind of add some depth there. But yes, you know, listen, it's a big season for Jordan. This is his team, but yeah, he should be confident in that, you know, this is my team. And you know, he's always had the pulse of this team. So, I think he's due for his best season yet.
Patrick Burnham of the Osceola.com, the Rivals website for Florida State. And he's with us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Patrick, you mentioned the ACC Atlantic, right? And look, the ACC's had some down years, all right? I've been the first to poke fun at the Atlantic Coast Conference. I will, you know, admit that openly. This year is not one of them. NC State thinks this might be their best team in decades. Clemson yes. thinks they're going to be good. Wake Forest is coming off a ACC Atlantic Championship, and they're going to score, it looks like, 50 points a game. I mean, that is a bear of a schedule for Florida State this year.
Well, listen, I think that the longer the ACC has been in this, you know, when it brought in Florida State and Miami and the rest of them, you know, I don't think the depth at the head coaching spots in the ACC has ever been deeper. Obviously, there are a lot of great quarterbacks or guys that have potential to be great quarterbacks in this league. And that doesn't even include a guy like Slovis, who's at Pitt now, his first year in the league. But, yeah, I don't recall going into an AC season where I felt on either side of the both divisions where it was more wide open, right? We saw a Clemson team that struggled last year offensively, which, you know, they struggled with 10-3. We should all be so lucky. So, so I think it's kind of wide open. I mean, you know, Clemson's had a lot of turnover in their coaching staff. You know, he hired Dabo, promoted from within with a lot of guys that hadn't been on the field in a while. So we'll see how that goes. And then NC State's got to learn to be a front runner. You know, they've never been in this position before where I believe they were voted by the ACC writers to be the favorite on that side in the Atlantic. So, and then of course, you know, listen, Wake Forest has Sam Hartman back. They're not, you'll see how they do on defense. They brought in a new defensive coordinator, but certainly when you add those guys to Florida, and of course, Miami is expected to take a big jump. They've got, and they're obviously on the other side, but, you know, looking at Florida State's schedule, you know, it is a daunting schedule, no doubt. And then you throw LSU and Florida in there as well.
Patrick, to that point, I had a Florida State buddy of mine, a season ticket holder, an alum, voice concern to me about, well, first off, it was about Mario Cristobal in Miami and Billy Napier at Florida and what they're doing on the recruiting trail. But he also voiced concern about the whole idea of the NILs at Florida and Miami compared to the NIL situation in Tallahassee. For Florida State fans that might be concerned that they see Miami and Florida getting all these recruits that are getting pretty high on the ranking board, Florida State obviously is not right now. What would be your message to them?
Well, I think you just got to be patient, right? I mean, you know, Florida State's got an NIL program. Is it as aggressive as Florida or Miami's? That remains to be seen. Listen, I think Florida State is going to have a chance to grab its fair share of really good football players out of the high school ranks and out of the transfer portal. It's still Florida State to some, you know, still got a brand. I think they knocked it out of the park with the offensive line class they signed last year. That was part of the NIL. We've watched those young kids develop, like a Julian Armella and a Quayshon Sapp, as they continue to grow each and every practice. So, I think that Mike knows he's looking for a fit, whether that is a player, as a person, and you factor in the NIL and all of that. But I think you got to, you know, Mike was hired for a reason. You know, he's got some good coaches on his staff. He's expanded the recruiting department. He hired a former FSU Seminole, Jared Ross, who was at Jacksonville Trinity Christian for years and years as an assistant coach. Listen, all this NIL stuff will work itself out. Right now it's kind of Katie bar the door. It's kind of unregulated. It's a wild, wild west. I think that will at some point they'll have to put some guardrails on it. But no, I think you trust this staff to go out and recruit and sign the players that best fit Mike's system at Florida State University. And I think that as we're going down the road, they'll be just fine.
And Patrick, as we wrap up, I got to ask, with your family's legacy there at Florida State, you mentioned your dad earlier, you covering the Seminoles as long as you have, hard to believe a year yesterday since Bobby Bowden passed away. Where on earth did that year go? It was tough when it happened, but as we get further away, we celebrate what a great coach, what a great man he was. But again, a year ago yesterday, we lost the great Bobby Bowden.
Yeah, you know, Coach Bowden meant the world to my family. Our relationship with Coach Bowden goes back to when my father had dropped out of school in Alabama, went back home to Pell City, Alabama, started working in the steel mills, and Coach Bowden had just took over as a head coach at Howard, which is now Samford University. He came and taught my dad back into school. And then, of course, you know, Coach Bowden, my first set of golf clubs was given to me by Coach Bowden. I didn't even know he knew my name, but Wilson, Wilson gave him a set of staff golf clubs every year. And he used to give his old set to the coach's kids. And so it just happened to be my summer. So I fell in love with golf because of Coach Bowden, because I would go sneak onto the golf course across the street from our house and taught myself how to play. And still wish I had those clubs around. And, I still miss running into them. We got a little gas station right outside our neighborhood. I live about a half mile from his house. I pass by his house every day. And, you know, that family has always been great to the Burnhams, and Coach Bowden is the reason for that. And I always got a chuckle because anytime I ran into him, he would always say, "I know you're one of the Burnham boys, but I can't remember whether you're Pat or Shane." He'd always call me buddy like he did everybody else. But he knew I was a Burnham, and that impressed me because obviously I didn't play for him, but I did play for his son Terry at Samford. And Coach Bowden's missed. I used to see him at the golf club putting balls, and he had such dynamic energy, and certainly it was a sad day when he wasn't here anymore, but certainly anytime you think of Coach Bowden, it puts a smile on your face.
Hey Patrick, real quick, man, give your website some love, theosceola.com. You're a brand new affiliate for Rivals for Florida State.
We just have started if you're into recruiting, me and our recruiting analyst, Charles Fishbein, who owns Elite Scouting Services down in South Florida, we started a segment called Reeling Them In. It's a video segment. And this week we interviewed 2023 offensive tackle Chris Otto, who earned a scholarship offer from the Seminole Showcase Camp 2 weeks ago. But love for you guys to check that out. But yes, we are connected with Rivals now. We've expanded our recruiting coverage at the Osceola. And you can go to floridastate.in.rivals.com and check us out. Everything's open right now for the first month. And then once the season starts, we'll go behind, a lot of these stories will go behind the paywall, but we'd love for everybody to check us out. And we are looking forward to getting over there on Thursday and check out some Seminoles practices. And then we're going to go around and check out some high school practices in the afternoon.
Perfect. Patrick Burnham, theosceola.com. Hey, Patrick, enjoyed the conversation, man. Thank you very much. Let's do it again soon.
Oh, anytime. Thank you, Ryan, for having me.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Yes, it is. Halftime on Hacker After Dark. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. We're with you till midnight tonight, our late show every Tuesday, 10 to midnight. Of course, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. We are 8 o'clock until 10 o'clock. The high school football season right around the corner. We will kick off year number 16 of the Friday Night Lights postgame show. Our first episode this season will be Friday night, August the 26th. Translation, that is 2 weeks from this Friday night. I've always looked at that show as kind of like my baby. You know what I mean? Right when this station started in 2007 in April, we started Friday Night Lights in August of 07. And I have been a part of every one of those shows over the last 15, going into year 16, either as a producer, co-host, host. I certainly love it. Andrew Gibson will join me again this year. Dylan Denmark will be a part of it this year. So Friday Night Lights begins Friday night, August the 26th. A man that we'll probably hear from pretty regularly under the Friday Night Lights as the brand new head coach at Mandarin High School. I met him for the first time when he was the head coach of my alma mater at Wolfson. Things did not work out there, and I will tell you, wasn't his fault. I'll just leave it at that. It was a bad situation. But Toby Bullock has been an assistant at many programs in this area. Toby Bullock is a guy in the high school football ranks that when you talk to people, you never hear a bad thing about this man. You never hear a bad thing about this guy. I like him. I hope he does very well at Mandarin. And I had a chance to catch up with Toby last week at the high school football media day. And here's my conversation with the brand new head football coach at Mandarin High School, Toby Bullock. 2022 High School Football Media Day, TIAA Bank Field, and welcome back to the head coaching ranks, a guy that coached my alma mater at one time, head coach Toby Bullock, now with Mandarin. Just for people that want to know, that's essentially like going from Florida to Florida State, but I'm going to forgive him. Coach, congratulations on the new gig.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Coach, what has it been like? I mean, you were a head coach at Wolfson. You were dealt a very bad hand. I'm an alum, but I'll be willing to admit that. It was not a good scenario. You worked your way back up as an assistant coach, and now you take over one of the biggest public schools in the area. What's this offseason been like for you?
It's been exciting. It's joy every day to come to work. One of the things I think people take for granted in anything in life is participation and people wanting to be there to do something with you. Makes things so much easier, and participation and players being there every single day. Coaching isn't a job; it's a passion, and it's when you don't have those things that you really feel the grind of what coaching is.
I'm sure you hear this a lot because I certainly hear it. Every person that brings up Toby Bullock has something positive to say. I've never heard, I'm serious, in years of doing this, with you even at Wolfson as the head coach, being an assistant everywhere you've been. You're just one of the guys that people just really, really like in this area, which is something to, I think, be happy about, Coach.
It's exciting. If that's how people truly feel about me, that's a great compliment. And one that, you know, when my time's gone, you hope people still feel that way about you. And at the end of the day, if I coach for somebody, my goal is always to come out of it as his best assistant coach. And my players, I want them to say that I was the best coach that they have ever had. And that's building relationships, that's going through anything. So any way that I can have people that have a positive spin on my life, many people respect it. I lost my dad when I was very young, and the stories that I would hear about him growing up just always brought me great pride. And if my boys, I have two of them, can have people that respect, you know, hear stories about me like I heard stories about my father, then my life was a success.
Toby Bullock, the head coach of Mandarin. Coach, it is your second stop as a head coach. Differences for you, Toby Bullock, head coach at Wolfson, to now where you are, Toby Bullock, head coach of Mandarin.
Number one difference is at Wolfson, I wanted, coming, you know, into my first job, I wanted assistants to feel very a part of what we were doing. I probably got away from some of my beliefs too much at Wolfson, and I think now I'm probably doing a better job, or at least I hope I'm doing a better job of making my assistants feel that their opinion and their effort is, you know, being rewarded, but also staying to the core values and beliefs of not only in the X's and O portion of it, but the every day in, day out grind. That's what I think the number one thing that is probably different. And the number two is, comes back to the participation. Availability is the best ability in football. And right now we have a roster of 115. Would never have that at Wolfson. The school, you know, just isn't built to have that at this time. And so to have that, it brings in depth. It brings in some, you know, different types of talent, and also brings in a lot of personalities. But when you have those personalities, if you have great coaches and great leaders of men, which I think I do, it allows you to see more obstacles, overcome more obstacles. So when those obstacles come up, and hopefully 10 years from now, we'll be prepared better than we are today for those obstacles.
First year as a head coach at Mandarin, you're obviously not unfamiliar with the Mandarin program. There are some coaches here, the Metro Suburban thing doesn't bother them at all. And then there's teams like you, which the Metro Suburban thing is going to affect you guys if you want to go to the promised land. It's a deep run in the state playoff. What did you make what the FHSAA did? Because you're going to have to be traveling a lot in the postseason if you make it there.
the traveling doesn't bother me. I'm not a fan of the split, and I'm not a fan of the split just because now you, no matter if you win a metro or you win a suburban title, you're not really a true state title, and I have a problem with that. I feel myself very lucky that we were able to win when I was an assistant coach at Mandarin in 18, so I at least have had that experience. But I don't see how splitting up, you know, you have schools now like First Coast is in the same district with Inglewood, and they have several much larger population. I don't see how that's fair. So school population and me, or if you just want to count males for male sports and females for female sports, however you want to do it, it's fine. But I think the suburban metro thing is a mistake. I'm not a fan of it. And the travel portion doesn't bother me as much because we were already going through Orlando, being a Duval school. Once we got through St. John's County and Duval got done playing each other, we were going to be going down there anyway. So that portion of it doesn't really bother me. I just hate the fact that there's no chance of seeing a Bartram Trail and a Mandarin in a state playoffs game. Forget the championship. We wouldn't play. We're north anyway. But you won't even see it in a finals or a third round. It's not going to happen. And that's a shame because it would help. When you have two schools that are well-known in that area, it brings in more money. You're able to bring more to your kids and give them a better experience and a better just life in the game of football and all the joy that football can bring. So that stinks. You know, traveling a Lake Mary up here or another school is not going to bring the gate that playing a Bartram Trail at home will do, or a Creekside at home. And so, no, I'm not a fan of it at all.
Yeah, certainly some knockdown dragouts with Mandarin and Oakleaf, Bartram, Creekside, Nice. Those can no longer happen because Duval is metro. Those other counties are suburban. Final moments here with Toby Bullock of Mandarin. What about your Mandarin Mustangs here in 2022? What can we expect?
I think that we're a team that can play against with anybody. I think we're a very young team. I think we're a very talented team. And I think that if the coaches that we've put in place and the kids have the relationships, I think they do. I think they'll be very well prepared. And I think through that preparation, we'll have a good season.
There you go, Toby Bullock, the head coach of the Mandarin Mustangs. That was last week at High School Football Media Day. And, yeah, you know, it's interesting when you think about all the new head coaches, all the new faces in the area, 32 head coaching changes in Northeast Florida and Southeast Georgia over the last 2 years. We'll follow Toby Bullock and Mandarin, certainly, this year under the Friday Night Lights. We'll get back into the world of the National Football League coming up in a moment. John Shipley of Jaguars Report. He's been out at training camp the last 2 days. They had a day off today. What about Sunday? What about Monday? What about looking ahead to Cleveland coming in on Friday night? Where are the Jaguars coming into preseason game number 2? John Shipley does a terrific job for Jaguar Report, and he joins us next. It's Hacker After Dark on a Tuesday night, our late night edition. In Jacksonville, thank you for staying up with us here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. Now.
Hello.
Another great guest on the Farrah and Farrah phone line. Brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville. It is a Monday evening, and we are glad you are with us. The Jaguars back on the field today. Another good practice for the offense. Good connections with the quarterback and the wide receivers. This follows a day of some pretty intense tackling yesterday down there at Episcopal High School. John Shipley was in attendance for both sessions. He writes for Jaguar Report, and he's always kind enough to join us here on Hacker After Dark. John, thank you for the time, brother. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, John, thank you, man. So we're all coming back from Canton yesterday. What was a great weekend. Lo and behold, the Jaguars decide to get after it. At practice yesterday, I'm following along your timeline, and you said that you were talking to players, and it was one of the more physical NFL training camp practices they said they had in quite some time.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can only compare it to, you know, the 4 training camps I've been at, you know, dating back to 2019, and there hasn't been a training camp that practice that I think can even come close to it. Like, it Like I said yesterday, it more resembles, you know, like one of the old throwback two-a-days from, you know, the 90s and early 2000s. That's more what it was like than what you think your standard NFL practice is like. And it really seemed like, you know, the Jaguars, you know, they wanted to get physical. They wanted to get guys game ready. And they took legitimate hits. You know, they took care of each other in the sense that, you know, guys weren't out there trying to injure each other. But it was full speed. It was collisions that you're going to see on Sundays.
John, do you think that stemmed from the game on Thursday night in Canton? Were they not happy with the tackling? Were they not happy with the physicality? Or do you think this was planned before that?
I think it was always planned, even before the game. And one big reason I say that is because, you know, you had 20-plus guys who are going to be really important, you know, and once week one comes around, who didn't dress, you know, for the Canton game. You know, they've had no real live contact and, you know, it's still up in the air how many guys are going to dress for Friday's game. So I think it was always the plan to kind of get those guys the reps. And, you know, the fact that it coincided after a game where the Jaguars look like they still need to work on tackling, I think was a coincidence, but probably a happy coincidence considering they need the work.
John Shipley, Jaguar Report, here with us on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. I guess one of the big stories that came out of Sunday's practice, John, was Travis Etienne taking a couple of shots, right? To my knowledge, that was the first time he had really been hit in full pads since the injury in the preseason in New Orleans last year. What was the reaction when that happened, and how did Etienne respond?
Yeah, no, it was absolutely, like you said, it's been quite some time since Etienne was hit like that. And I want people to know, you know, this wasn't your typical hard hit that you see in training camp, which is, you know, there are definitely some thuds, but guys don't normally go to the ground. No, these were collisions that, like I said, you're going to see on Sundays. These were full speed game hits. And Etienne said after practice that he was even kind of seeking out the contact. You know, he knew it was a full contact practice and he wanted to feel like what it would feel like getting hit again, because the way he put it, he hasn't been hit like that since his last game at Clemson. He hasn't really been hit. He sparingly played in the preseason last year. He went through last year's training camp. So I think it was important for him to really experience that. And he popped right up each time. He got up immediately. And he even said after practice that he felt like he probably could have been even more aggressive on his end.
John Shipley, Jaguar Report, here with us on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. John, I haven't talked to you since the game last Thursday night. What were your takeaways from the Hall of Fame game?
No, I thought that Trayvon Walker, you know, absolutely looked the part that you would expect from a number one overall pick. And, you know, I know Brandon Parker isn't an all-world left tackle, but, I mean, he is a fifth-year guy who the Raiders brought back. You know, he's started 30 games in his career. He's at least an NFL-quality left tackle. You know, he wasn't going against a team's third-string left tackle. He was going against, you know, an actual, you know, serviceable lineman. So I think the fact that he was as impressive as he was against Parker was a big deal. And the one thing to me that stood out was you could still tell that he's still adjusting the outside linebacker. He's still a little raw. He's still learning to dip around guys. But the fact that he's this far ahead in his development this early, I think, is a wonderful sign. Then I also thought that, you know, maybe some of the depth issues on offense, you know, kind of creeped up. You know, there are a lot of questions, you know, after the main guys at tight end, at running back, at receiver. And, you know, we kind of saw that throughout the game. They didn't really have any go-to guys on the second or third teams to really give the ball to. And I think you saw it even in practice today after, you know, Christian Kirk, he's obviously fine, but after he rolled his ankle, did practice for the last 15 or 20 minutes or so of practice, you know, you could tell the Jaguars were missing something on the field, their first team offense. So I think just the overall, you know, the actual depth that they have there is something that definitely came up.
You know, Arden Key, I guess, was the star of last week's game, not named Trayvon Walker. Arden Key with a couple of sacks. What has he done in the two practices since the game? And did you see anything out of Arden Key leading into Thursday night that makes you think, huh, the Jaguars may have found something there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say right now Arden Key's, you know, they're really most underrated addition in the offseason. I think he's going to play a big role. I think his primary role is going to be as a disruptor, you know, in the middle of the defense, especially on, you know, nickel downs and passing downs, as somebody who can line up between the guards and tackles and not only go against guards, it just in terms of one-on-one in a phone booth, but he can also be really helpful on stunts. You know, one of his sacks, we saw him and Trayvon Walker run a game that ended up helping him get to the quarterback. And he can also play some on the edge. You know, the one position that the Jaguars overall in the roster look like they have some serious, you know, questions about in terms of the backups is that outside linebacker position. And thankfully, he gives them somebody who can play the edge when needed. So I definitely thought, you know, coming into the game, you know, he's somebody who's had a good camp. He's a really energetic and vocal guy. I'd say he's already, you know, one of the most vocal defenders on the team and somebody that the team really listens to and is drawn to. So I think he's going to have a big year in this defense. It wouldn't surprise me if he got close to 8 sacks in this defense. It really wouldn't.
John Shipley, Jaguar Report, always kind enough to join us here on 1010 XL in Jacksonville. John, the Jaguars have had a couple of close calls, right? Tyson Campbell in the game Thursday night. You're all holding your breath. Certainly I was. Turns out he was fine. Today out at practice, apparently Christian Kirk had a situation where he went down, maybe limped off the field. All indication are he is fine, but man alive, early on here, couple of really tense moments for the Jaguars.
Yeah, no, and like you said, early on, it's good to see that those guys are okay. I mean, I think, you know, when everybody saw that Christian Kirk was limping off the field, you know, that was obviously, you know, everybody in Jacksonville who watches or pays attention to Jaguars football, you know, held their collective breath. But the fact that he ended up, you know, it looked like he was okay afterwards. I even saw him giving an interview after practice. Normally, you know, the rule in sports media is injured guys, you know, don't really interview. If he was, in my opinion, seriously injured to the point where it's a concern, I don't think he would have been, you know, doing the interview. Or, you know, even after he got hurt, he ended up, after being with the trainer for a few minutes, he joined the rest of the offense on the sideline. He obviously didn't go back on the field. But normally when you see a guy get injured, he goes off, you know, to the side. Say, you know, Will Richardson yesterday, you know, got injured during goal line work, and he ended up going off to the side with trainers and working, you know, stretching for the rest of the practice. We didn't see that with Kirk. So definitely some good signs. And I mean, the fact that they're getting some of their injured guys back, and Jamal Agnew, Juwan Taylor practiced today, Darius Williams did 7-on-7 work. And once James Robinson gets back, you know, they really are in good shape health-wise.
You know, let's go to the offensive line. Let's start with Cam Robinson. Apparently he had a very good day today. He's had a really good offseason. Some people will tell you this is the best Cam Robinson maybe has looked as a Jaguar since his rookie year of 2017. John, what have you seen out of Cam Robinson to this point?
No, I've definitely seen the most dominant I've seen Cam Robinson look in training camp in my, you know, couple of years covering him. And, you know, that's obviously not including his first couple of years in the league. But, you know, I think Cam Robinson has been, you know, fantastic, both, you know, in the running game and the passing game. There's been several moments where he's been able to get out in space and spring a big run or big, you know, yards after the catch explosion from a guy like Etienne or a guy like Jamal Agnew. And it just seems like he's really taken the part of being a leader of that unit. And it seems like at this point, you know, he's playing really free. It seems like there are some players who, you know, after they get paid that, you know, they play arguably the best ball because, you know, they're not worried about the contract. They're not worried about having to prove it anymore. You know, they can just focus, you know, strictly on football and they can have, you know, that kind of self-confidence. And he's been playing like a guy with a lot of self-confidence. So he definitely has an air of confidence to him that now, you know, when Cam Robinson comes up in a one-on-one drill, it's, you know, almost become appointment viewing this camp where, you know, I don't think you could say that in the past. So, you know, he's done good against Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker, Chase Young, DeJuan Spoon. Everybody they've thrown at him, he's held his own against. So this is the best camp I've seen him have. And if they can get him to ascend and take that next step in his, you know, sixth year in the league, fifth year, then I think that would be a major development.
And, John, you mentioned Juwan Taylor getting back into it. It's been about a week of camp, or I guess a couple of weeks of camp, that Juwan Taylor has missed a good portion of. Walker Little and Juwan Taylor, that battle at right tackle, really is going to start heating up. I mean, we're 1 month from tonight till opening night in the NFL. The Jaguars play 3 days after that. Where do we think the right tackle battle is right now?
Yeah, no, I think right now the right tackle battle is still completely in the air, right? I don't think the Jaguars were ever going to ding, you know, Juwan Taylor for, you know, his injury. I think that they want to see him in pads and see him and Walker Little actually, you know, at the same level and compare them because, you know, to this point, Juwan Taylor, you know, like you said, he had missed, you know, 6 or 7 practices. It's been, they've mostly seen Walker Little, you know, they have game reps of Walker Little. They have training camp and pads reps of Walker Little. Today was the first time they were able to get that from Taylor. So I still think it's a battle that's completely up in the air. I don't think there's a single favorite. I do think Walker Little helped himself in how he played. I think, you know, maybe if there was, you know, a gap to start training camp, that maybe he's closed that and made it even more even. But I don't think we'll know really who the right tackle is until, you know, closer to week one.
All right, John, there's 3 preseason games left. You got Cleveland on Friday, Pittsburgh a week from Saturday, and then you end in Atlanta. And, of course, you got the joint practices with Atlanta. By all indications, if history repeats itself, a lot of starters will not play in the last preseason game. So you basically have two home games, Cleveland and Pittsburgh. Of the 21 guys that did not play last Thursday, how many, John, of those 21 do you anticipate seeing this Friday against Cleveland?
Ah, man, I'd say you maybe see maybe half of those guys again. I think you might see Trevor Lawrence for a series, and I obviously any injured guys you're not going to see, but it wouldn't surprise me if you see, you know, guys like Juwan Taylor. I don't think you'll see, you know, a lot of the veterans who sat out or a lot of the injured guys, but I'd say maybe half of that list would be back.
John, here's my concern about Trevor, and I know Press Taylor today, I believe he said something along the lines of they're still talking through if Trevor's going to play on Friday night. I mean, this isn't Joe Montana, right? This isn't Peyton Manning. This was a guy that threw 12 touchdowns and 17 picks last year, and now he's got a completely new wide receiving core, a brand new tight end, a running back that didn't play last year. Do the Jaguars have to be careful to not be too conservative? I mean, you got to get some reps, right, with these guys before Washington.
I do think, you know, obviously you have to give them some reps. But the one thing I would say is, you know, I saw a really interesting interview, you know, from Aaron Rodgers, and I've heard this sentiment, you know, from other players in the past is that, you know, especially on the offensive side of the ball and at quarterback, sometimes practice reps mean more than preseason reps. You know, so many times in the preseason, you know, take the Hall of Fame game, for example, you know, both teams agreed to be really vanilla on terms of scheme and what they did. You know, Lawrence was seeing more exotic looks in practice from his own defense than he was seeing, you know, than he would have seen from the Raiders defense last week. So I do think there's a fine line. And I would say if it was a situation like last year where he wasn't getting those, you know, as many first team reps as he's getting now, and he was splitting and he was still in need of reps, I'd say absolutely he needs to play. But at this point, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, they're just going to wait until September 11th.
John Shipley from Jaguar Report. John, final thought. Cleveland comes in on Friday. Pretty good roster. It'll be a pretty good gauge for the Jaguars. And boy, you got to wonder how many NFL eyes will be in Jacksonville if Deshaun Watson happens to play in that game Friday night.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I think, going to be one of the preseason games that people have a lot of eyes on. And for me, I remember last year, the point when people asked me the question of when did you know it started going wrong for Urban Meyer, my answer was always after the Cleveland game in the preseason last year. So it'll be interesting to compare the Jaguars and their performance in this game to what they did in that game last year. You know, I remember last year that they played almost their entire roster while Cleveland had their backups in, and Case Keenum went on like 10 of 11 and led two touchdown drives. You know, you could just tell from that point on it was going to be a long year. So I'm interested to compare it this year, you know, one, what their strategy is, and two, how they look, because, you know, in a lot of ways it is the same Cleveland roster outside of Watson.
Well, I like that. That's absolutely right. Last year's preseason game against the Browns did leave a lot to be desired. Hopefully the Jaguars can have a better showing on Friday night. John Shipley always gives us a great showing. Jaguars Report is where you can find him, and he covers the Jaguars as closely as anybody. Always kind enough to...
Now, another interview on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. 18 days. That's how far it is away from the first Saturday of college football, which, of course, involves Florida State as they open up with Duquesne before the LSU game on Labor Day weekend. Vanderbilt plays that opening Saturday. It's actually a pretty decent Big Ten game. I believe Nebraska and Northwestern that opening Saturday as well. When we talk college football on Hacker After Dark, that usually means we talk with my buddy Brenton Beard. You see him on First Coast News. You get him right here on 1010XL. Brent, it is creeping ever so closer, my friend. How are you?
I'm really excited about this time of year. I know some other folks that say they're bored. My answer to that is, come on, you've got to be kidding. We've had almost 9 months to where we really haven't had football to some degree. I know, and it may actually be less than that, but you get the point. And week zero is something. I'm with you. I look forward to that. I mean, you get to see Vanderbilt in Hawaii. It's the late game. Western Kentucky is always interesting. Florida State just needs a win badly to start the season, don't they, Hack? And that's on the network. Florida A&M at UNC at 8:15, also on the network. I mean, people have talked about that, but you're right. I mean, the Fox game in Dublin with Nebraska Northwestern and Nebraska needing a win in the worst way. Now, I'm going to throw this out here for people to be the thinking about this. The time's coming, particularly when we expand the playoffs, then a week zero Hack is going to be the start of the season.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming. Because if you're going to get the playoffs in, you've got to get all the games in, and they're going to play earlier than they normally would. But here's the thing. Now, you'll start seeing this next week, certainly the week after that, because these players start to say, well, we're tired of hitting each other. We wish we could play a game. How many times have you read that, Hack, about the third week of the of camp? Well, that's going to be taken care of in less than 5 years.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And look, I get it. Spring ball, summer conditioning, fall camp, you're ready to go. And you're right. Once that playoff gets expanded, the college football landscape will change again. Here with Brent Beard, you get him on First Coast News. You get him here often on Hacker After Dark. All right, Brent, got a lot to throw at you. Let's kind of go rapid fire. Let's begin in Florida State, in Tallahassee. You mentioned them. First and foremost, it was 1 year ago yesterday that we lost the idol, head coach Bobby Bowden. Hard to believe, Brent, it's been a year since Coach Bowden's passing.
Yeah, and it's certainly worth mentioning that, the impact that he still has on people's lives. I think that's a thing that it just kind of slipped up on us, that it had been a year. Courageous battle at the end, certainly one of the all-time greats. I was having a conversation over the weekend with a source that I talk to often at FSU, and he was just talking about how much maybe easier is the word, and how much Coach Bowden appreciated the media and would let them watch practice, as opposed to what you've got around the nation today, when coaches won't even see you, let you see the player stretching for fear they may give away some secret. You would think that they were trying to find out the codes to nuclear missiles or something like that. But Bowden was that way. Very open, transparent guy. Tremendous job. We know it didn't end real well. But regardless, Hack, when you throw it all together, he still deserves the honor that he gets. And again, it's just hard to believe it's been a year.
Well, I'll tell you, Brent, the thing with me, with Coach Bowden, I mentioned this a lot when it happened a year ago. I grew up in a Gator household. I was told, or programmed, I guess, from birth to not like Bobby Bowden. The first time I met the man, he was incredible. He was asking me about my family, asking me where I went to school. Here's Bobby Bowden talking to an 18-year-old radio intern and was genuinely interested in who I was. It was an unbelievable moment for an 18-year-old.
Well, and he was that way basically with everyone. And what he did at Florida State was so unprecedented, how they ruled college football. Can you imagine if we would have had a playoff during the times when Bowden was coaching? They would have won more than national championships than they did. And I tell you what, Hack, this is a sermon on another day, but you really do wonder, too. Alabama made one of the greatest mistakes it ever made when they had opportunities not once but twice to hire him, and they did not. So instead that they went through a group of coaches that are quite forgettable compared to Bowden, but again, you're right. His ability to control the room or talk to you individually and feel like you're the most important person in the world, that will never be forgotten.
Brent Beard here with us, First Coast News, also right here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Brent, Florida State got a couple of Clay County commitments in the last few weeks. You are a Clay County resident, have been for a long time. Roderick Kearney at Orange Park and Sam Singleton, the running back at Fleming Island. Brent, not so much about the players, but the county in general, a county that you're very familiar with. Florida State's done really well in Clay County this year, and I just don't remember, you know, at least in recent memory, that Florida State's gone in there and done that well in Clay County on the recruiting trail.
Well, they really have. Look, this county, when I started writing for the Clay Sun edition of the Florida Times Union, we had really only three or four schools, and that has blossomed now to the fact where we've got an incredible amount of schools here, incredible amount of talent. I will say this, Sam Singleton from Fleming Island, as you know, but because of the Friday night show that you do, deep, deep runs, right, Hank, in the playoffs every year. Now, he's only 6'1", 171, but Singleton at the same time is a really good running back. I mean he had 26 offers total. Certainly he attracted a lot of attention, and frankly the Roderick Kearney 6'4", 300 is well thought of. He had 38 offers, by the way. Arkansas, Auburn, Clemson were some of the ones that were also looking at him.
Well, he committed to Florida State 30 minutes after his Gator official visit, which, yeah, again, yeah, I didn't. But, you know, I've talked to Roderick since then. I like him. I've talked to him a couple of times. Was that the right thing to do? I don't know. I think that was a little posturing maybe by Florida State to do that, but nevertheless, it's still a very good commitment that Mike Norvell got.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And look, you look at what he is an offensive lineman, and that's where they've got to improve. Now, talking to some Florida State people over the weekend, I said, where have they really improved? And they were kind of kidding. They said, well, you better sit down, because believe it or not, they've improved on the offensive line. And what they mean by that is, now, last year, get this, last year when they had a starter out on the offensive line, they lost every game. When they had every starter back, they won those games. So, but what I'm hearing is, as it was put to me, said, when this is the first time in a long time that we've got a good enough depth to where we have one or two go out, the offensive line won't be terrible. I thought that was an interesting way of putting it.
No, no question about it. They had to improve the O-line, and hopefully for Jordan Travis's sake, that O-line is improved here in 2022. All right, Brent, let's touch upon the media. And what I mean by that is television, the lifeblood of any sport, and what we've known to be college football regularity, the SEC on CBS, the Big Ten, for the most part on ESPN, ABC, although I know Fox has gotten involved in recent years. Major shifts, major changes coming. Brent, for the people here in Jacksonville, primarily that are big-time SEC and ACC fans, what does all of this mean? Because it won't be long until CBS no longer has the SEC, and it looks like they're going to have the Big Ten.
Well, to kind of put the two together, and again, I give credit to Sports Business Journal, Football Scoop. Brett McMurphy has been highly involved with all of this. Is their what they call their A package will remain with Fox with that big noon kickoff window that they have got. What is going to be different is CBS and NBC are about to join televising Big Ten games. Now, this is the biggest change, and I'm going to say this slowly because it needs it. CBS will replace the 3:30 SEC staple with the Big Ten. And NBC is expected to have a primetime night game. So the now CBS and NBC would have the B games, they call. Now, here's another slice of the pie that's affecting everybody. Apple or Amazon are going to be involved with this, in addition to FS1, obviously the Big Ten Network, and Peacock.
Oh, jeez. Now, here's my thing. Before we dive more into it, look,
yes.
I'm the oldest 38-year-old on the planet, okay? I get it, and I firmly understand that, and I've almost embraced it. I want the days back of the 12:30 Jefferson Pilot game.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Give me 3:30 SEC on CBS, and then give me 7 o'clock with Ron Franklin and Mike Gottfried. I know, I believe Franklin may he rest in peace. But those are the things that I want. Right. My needs are small.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about streaming this and this network taking this, and it'll take some getting used to. I guess is my point.
Well. It will, and the thing that's going to be getting used to more than anything else is actually two things. The Big Ten is not going to be involved with ESPN or ABC, which is fascinating. But the thing that you and I are used to, and you alluded to this, is the CBS 3:30 slot not having the SEC game of the week. How are fans going to deal with that, Hank?
It's going to be weird. I mean, I think CBS officially got the SEC, what, around 2000, I want to say, 2001?
Yeah, probably.
So you're talking 20-plus years every Saturday during college football at 3:30, you get the SEC, and now the SEC, what, in 2025, Brent, is when they're officially going to ABC and ESPN?
Well, I think it's actually 24. That's when that's going to be, but look, your point's solid, because see, all these grant of rights are basically going to be done within the next 2 or 3, 4 years. And on top of this, and this is the biggest part of all, is the fact that the college football playoff is going to be expanded. And we don't know how that's going to work, but you've got to keep in mind what that is going to be. So again, the money with all this is just astronomical. But that suffice to say, for our SEC listeners, and I know you've got all kinds of fans listening, that those are going to be the changes. That the Big Ten will no longer be with ESPN, CBS will 3:30 will be Big Ten. So that's the exciting thing about this, I guess. In some ways, is all the variety that you've got to go along with it too. And again, I think this is going to probably be announced next week or by the end of the week. Is their grant of rights is going to be, it's not going to be in the millions. It's going to be billions. Billions is what this is going to be. So right now, SEC and the Big Ten are the two big bosses in football, and they are able to garner the money because of that.
Well, that'll just about put a wrap on this edition of Hacker After Dark. Thank you to Brent Beard for joining us. That was part one of our conversation. You'll get part two tomorrow. Yeah, it's going to be really, really weird in the next couple of years when the Southeastern Conference is no longer on CBS. It appears the Big Ten is heading towards CBS. You also are going to have a situation where ESPN and ABC get the Southeastern Conference. What does that mean for NBC and Notre Dame? And then the streaming angle with Amazon and those. So there is a ton that we don't know yet. What we do know is that the landscape of our television, where the way we have viewed college football really over the last 20, 25 years, is about to change. So thank you to Brent Beard. Tomorrow night, we'll get more into the meat and potatoes, more into the actual on-the-field stuff as Florida, Florida State, Georgia, Miami are all in the midst of fall camp. All right, Brent Beard joined us. We also were joined by Patrick Burnham, the Osceola.com, as Florida State is in the middle of their practice. They are on the field 2.5 weeks from today, if you can believe it. August the 27th, they kick off their regular season. Really enjoyed the conversation with Patrick Burnham of the Osceola, Florida State fans. I think you'll enjoy that. If you missed it, go to 1010XL.com on the on-demand. You had John Shipley of Jaguar Report join us earlier today as the Jaguars are back on the field tomorrow, getting ready for Friday night's game, preseason game number 2 against the Cleveland Browns. And thank you to my friend Toby Bullock, the brand new head coach at Mandarin High School. Toby is inheriting a very good program from Bobby Ramsey. It's Toby's second opportunity as a head coach in the area. He was at Wolfson a couple of years as an assistant. Now he is back as a head coach at Mandarin. And best of luck to head coach Toby Bullock. Whew, we were busy on a Tuesday night. It'll be much more the same on a Wednesday. We'll be with you from 8 o'clock till 10 o'clock. And we hope you join us then. Dylan Denmark was your producer tonight. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the hacker Ryan Green in Jacksonville. Thank you, as always, for staying up late with us on a Tuesday night here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. So for all of us at HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Tuesday night / Wednesday morning, and we will do it all over again on a Wednesday beginning at 8 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.